Hey guys, welcome to Seeking What They Sought. My name is Jesse. We're here with Anthony and Sean, and also Alex Bryan, who is the new president of Walla Walla University. And it's actually really cool sort of full circle thing, because when we came to Walla Walla University in 2010, you were the pastor of the university church. And then now as alumni, we're looking back and we feel, I think we're all excited. I think we could all say that we're all excited that you're the president at Walla Walla University. Tell us a little bit about your experience. First of all, maybe getting to Walla Walla in short, and then what it's been like since then to now.
Yeah. You said we came in 2010. Did all three of you come in 2010?
Yeah.
No, Anthony didn't. Anthony didn't.
Oh, I was a little bit later.
At the wrong, he went to the wrong university.
Yeah, true.
Freshman year.
I went to Andrews for the first year. I came in 11.
Yeah. So I came to, Walla Walla University in 2009. So I was just right ahead. Oh. I was just right ahead of you. So
yeah.
I guess the four of us do have some history, don't we?
Actually, sorry. And before you answer the question, I was just realizing Sean and I have some more history with you as well. We were in one of your classes that you taught while you were there, and you had us memorize the entire story of the prodigal son from the book of Luke, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean and I made a song that's how we learned it. You ready, Sean? Jesus continued.
No, it's not going to sound good on here. Is that Eric Heston?
Anyway, I still to this day, Alex, I want to credit you for this. I still to this day remember most of that passage because of your class. So,
well, what I want to know is when I assigned that, what were your true feelings about me when I assigned that entire memorization?
Well, yeah, it was definitely a challenge, but no, I remember enjoying that class. I'm going to rat out Jesse. Jesse broke his leg that year. So he'd show up every day in this big old cast.
I think he was on
some sort of drugs. I don't know if it was Vicodin or something, but Alex, I want you to know, I caught Jesse a couple times falling asleep in your class. I'm just gonna say that. It did happen a couple times. So there you go, Jesse. Shame.
Thanks,
I had to write you up.
Appreciate that.
No, but I think when we came, go ahead, Anthony.
You go. You finish.
I was just gonna say, like, when we came in 2010, it did feel like, for us too, it's just going to college for the first time, that experience of things are bigger, right? We came from a academy campus that was pretty big. Auburn Adventist Academy was at the time a pretty big academy. But at the same time, going from that to university, that big feeling. And I remember just the university church, and you're the senior pastor. There was just something about the experience, and there's something interesting about, like, the university pastor. I don't know if we put that position on a pedestal, but I know growing up, like, it was a big deal to go listen to Randy Roberts, like a Carl Hafner and the like. And you were in that same talk. Like, I remember we got there and it's Alex Bryan. You're the senior pastor of Walla Walla University. That was just an interesting thing. I hadn't experienced that until going to Walla Walla. Everything's just bigger, grander.
How did you get there? How did you get from...
Well, yeah, Alex, sorry, but before you answer that, my main memory with you.
He's never going to talk.
My main memory. Sorry, Alex.
This is why I left pastoral ministry there, right there. This is an example. Chaos from the class, from the students that arrived around 2010. It was just.
Or the culprits. My main memory was when we were all three of us and were involved in the ministry at Walla Walla called Circle Church. And I remember you had invited a few of us. I think, Jesse, this is after you left, but you had invited a few of us into your office to talk about why we felt like student church ministry was so important to us. And I remember I said to you, with the hubris of my 19-year-old energy, I said, yeah, because the university church practices idolatry by playing orchestra every Sabbath. Mm. I don't know if you remember that, but I remember saying that to you.
I have a very gracious memory, which means I forgot, Anthony, I've forgotten this completely. And no, I don't
I really appreciate that.
But yeah, I think that I came from Tennessee. I'm from back east, right? So I grew up in North Carolina, went to college in Tennessee, worked in Georgia, worked back in Tennessee. That southeast mid-Atlantic area is where my life is. And the invitation to come to Walla Walla University in the winter of 2009. Is what brought me to the Great Pacific Northwest. And I married to a Walla Walla College girl. Nicole.
Okay.
So I married into that family. But I had always had this idea, both in my soul, both about Walla Walla, even though I went to school on the other side of the continent. There was always something about it that appealed to me. Always something that seemed, there was a buzz about it. There was a quality about it that seemed to combine this rich faithfulness to God in this gritty sort of way. But also there was we're on the Lewis and Clark trail. We're entrepreneurial. We're like pushing, not unfaithfully. And I think this is the key, not unfaithfully pushing forward, but following God in a very Hebrews 11 sort of way. The cloud of witnesses that are going to new places and challenging the way things are, but not, again, pushing away from, but following the way of Jesus. And I think that always appealed to me, even at a distance. And then my heart has always been most with faith-based higher education. I was born loving it, like the three of you. The stories you're telling, I had the same feelings about Gordon Beetz, who was the senior pastor when I was in college back east. Dwight Nelson, I could name figures of a generation beyond where I am. Those same feelings and just the magic, the true magic of the experience of faith-based higher ed has always gripped me. I come by it so honestly. It's who I am. And so the invitation, I felt the sense of calling to the particular of Walla Walla University, but then also just the general idea of, and the three of you have described it in your introduction a little bit, right? This sense, Sean, of largeness, of opportunity, of spiritual opportunity. And I think Walla Walla captures that. You know, I would, of course, argue probably better than anything I've experienced. There's just something about.
To be fair, and we're not biased. All of us are very balanced in our assessment of Christian higher ed. But Walla Walla far surpassed any other experience I had at any other. Granted, I only went to Walla Walla, but it was by far the best out of all of the,
out of all the options.
But out of all of your not experience,
Anthony, I know you started at Andrews, but you have to admit
I saw the light.
Yeah,
I saw the light.
But one of the things about Walla Walla that I thought was really interesting was it's far enough away from everything still that a lot of students stuck around. I felt like it allowed for there to be a culture of actually knowing the other students. And I say this to students now who will talk to me. There's actually a few that are actually one. Our babysitter's coming up your direction. So you better take good care of her because we want her to come back and babysit in the summers. But the reality was we actually got to know people around us, and there was an atmosphere of like student-led spiritual growth and development and programs, which was really, I think, unique compared to at least at that time, what the other landscapes looked like. I'm curious, what do you notice about Walla Walla? You said a few things, but what do you notice about Walla Walla and its culture that once you got there and then now that you're going to be the president makes it a place that you think has the potential to move everything forward from here?
First, let me say, as a student, I experienced Southern and I experienced Andrews University in seminary. And I had great experiences there. So I just want to say, just straight.
We know you have to say that now.
I genuinely learned to love the thing. I think the point you make is a good one. The relative geographic isolation is a massive advantage. It's you guys may have heard me say from the pulpit, people say Walla Walla is on the road to nowhere. Kind of actually, Walla Walla is on the road to everywhere. And the reason it's on the road to everywhere, I think, is in large part because, look, it's the reason we love summer camps. It's the reason we go on vacations in secluded places. It's the reason that I'll go back to the Gospels. It's the reason why Jesus goes to the other side of the lake. Mm-hmm. There is something that happens when human beings find space that's not sheltered, but it's in some way encapsulated, a way where real things can happen. And in the spiritual tradition, this is thick, right? We see, we read stories about this. So I think that's part of it. But I also do think there's something, and I'll reference again, I think there's something about that. We're on the Lewis and Clark Trail. Pacific Northwesterners are They're a breed that's a little bit different. They've pushed the boundaries. And that's why I kind of capture Hebrews 11, which to me is about this group of people who were deeply faithful. I hope your audience hears me clearly. Deeply faithful, but there's a sense that we're not just hanging out in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the story of the book of Acts, which starts in Jerusalem and ends in Rome. And it's that trajectory of the Apostle Paul that if I was going to pick the apostle of Walla Walla University, I would say it's probably the Apostle Paul, because it's not the apostle that stays in Jerusalem. It's the apostle that's in Corinth and Athens and Ephesus and Thessalonica. It's this movement into the world with the Spirit's leading. And I think that is really in the water of students to go through Walla Walla University.
Yeah. You went through from being the pastor there at Walla Walla, you went through a number of different spaces before now coming back to Walla Walla as the president. Tell us a little bit about the journey of the last little over a decade.
Yes, I spent a year as a college president in Ohio at Kettering College and loved the people there and actually really enjoyed the proximity to so many really cool. When you live in Ohio, by the way, you're like a day's drive from all kinds of stuff. It's pretty incredible, from Washington, D.C. to Chicago to, it's a pretty centrally located place. But it just wasn't the right fit. We came back to Walla Walla, served another 4 years here. And then I have worked for Adventist Health, which is the health system on the West Coast. There's 5 Adventist healthcare systems in the United States. It's the second largest of the systems on the West Coast. And I worked as chief mission officer and really have been commuting up and down the West Coast for the last 6+ years. So that's the trajectory. And here we are.
Why at this time? Why back to, you said it's in your blood, but what is it that drew you back into the Adventist education sphere? I don't know what salaries are, but I imagine that healthcare might have a higher ceiling. I could be wrong, but I also know that there's a lot of stress and attention on any person in a role like a college president. So why in the world would you want this?
Because I hold a conviction that so goes faith-based higher education, so goes the church, and so goes the world.
That's a big one.
higher education was the brainchild of followers of Jesus a millennium ago. Okay, you go back to Europe, Bologna, and the idea was that there would be the creation of these communities that thought deeply, that were rich in conversation, that were building something together that would influence the world. Higher education has moved in an incredibly secular direction. They have largely lost Christian theism at the center. It's a very different animal. And I think that a recovery of a rich, faithful higher education where the God of Jesus Christ is at the center is the future. I could give you a scientific argument, which is between the ages of 18 and 25, our frontal lobes are getting wired up. That's, as human beings, that's where reasoning, creative thought, moral sensitivity, that's really when the big things happen in many respects between those ages of it. We know that in terms of neuroscience. Mm-hmm. And to take gentlemen like you, when you were my students, for you to put yourself in an environment where you're thinking about science and literature and religion and relationships and politics and all the deep things of life, to do that in the context of how does Jesus relate to all this? How does Christian theism inform this? What is an integrative way to think about the world? That's the pivotal moment. And if you get that, it gives you a fighting chance. And here we are in a politically divided world. The church is struggling. Society, anxiety, and a lack of meaning and purpose. You read all the data points. You guys are smart. You read them all, right? But you add all that up, and you look at the state of higher education in the United States, for example, which is struggling, right? Yeah. It's lost the confidence of society. It's on its heels. Why would I not want to give the balance of my career as someone who's in his early to mid 50, why would I not want to invest myself in arguably the single most important institution and industry that will determine the future. And I would say to a donor, there's no more significant dollar you could give than to faith-based higher education. To a volunteer, no more. A place you want to come work, there's nothing that has that level of influence. So I've approached, I'm a logical thinker, Jesse, and Anthony and Sean, you look at it on its merits, nothing will determine the future like a place like Walla Walla University. I want to be a part of it.
So here's the thing, Alex. I've gotten a couple calls from the Alumni Association, and I, to be honest, like, what do I even have to give? But what you just said, makes me want to give a bunch of money. I don't have it, but I would.
I'm on board.
That's super powerful, because what you're saying is one of the most far-reaching implications. We've talked to other people, and people have big picture ideas about Adventist education, but what you've just said is not playing it small, to put it simply. When we look realistically at Adventist education down the chain, like from higher ed all the way down to early education, it's been struggling for a while. And we were talking with Larry Blackmer, and he was saying that I think our peak was in the 70s, and we've been declining until I think 2016.
Yeah, 2017.
So it's getting a slight tick back, but I'm curious about your thoughts on why it has declined, and then what in the world we have to hope for with considering how it has gone.
Yes.
Footnote, Larry Blackmer was my academy principal at Mount Pisgah Academy. And anyway.
Oh, wow.
Hey.
Yeah. Nice. And loved him, by the way. I loved Larry Blackmer.
That's awesome.
I'm sure he gave you some explanations. Demographics are a part of the equation. We're having less babies than we were in previous generations, at least in this country. Actually, that's a global trend now. With modernization, people are having fewer children. I think that's one. Two, you look at some of the demographics in the Adventist church, for example, and you have incomes that are not keeping pace with purchasing power, right? You have people are often not making. So there's a price tag associated with private education of any kind, and that becomes a barrier to entry. I think that's part of it. Three, I think that the interest that parents often have for their kids have spilled over into some of the amenities that public education can afford. There's more money for athletics. There's more money for sophisticated kinds of special education. You could go on and on. So I think that's a piece of it. I think that, where else would I go with that? I think that in some ways, I think the purpose of Adventist education, look, when I was a kid, it was like, you're going to go there because I want you to have Adventist friends. It was a pretty simple calculation. And I think even in college, I think that was the place you went to marry a good Adventist girl, blah,
right.
blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I think it's not that those things aren't still true to a degree, but we live in a much more complex world than that. And I think that we need fresh arguments. And I would refer you, it's always dangerous to refer to yourself, but I would refer you to the argument I just made a couple minutes ago on the conversation. We need fresh vision and arguments about why we're even in the business of this. So higher education, some you guys might remember the sermon I would preach every year on higher ed at Walla Walla. I captured Adventist history, right? From the 1840s to the 1880s, Adventists were very insular. That was the focus. 1880s, Ellen White starts pushing. We've got to change the world. We need to open our minds. And that's when Adventist higher education is born. And you look at all of these colleges and universities, boom, 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 boom. And they exploded in the number of institutions around the world as well, the K-12 systems, because education was always about mission. It was always about furthering, making a difference in the world. And my sense is that while I've got a daughter going to Walla Walla as a freshman this fall, right? Of course, I'm glad that she will have a network of like-minded people and some of these pieces, but I think that vision is not big enough. See, I think that's fine, and I think it's good. Don't mishear me. I think it's, but actually the project of faith-based higher education has a much higher calling, and I think we have failed to reimagine why we're even doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think that, because look, I think that you'll overcome some of those other barriers if you really believe in something, if it makes sense at a bigger level. But That's my take. The costs are high, but that's not because we're building football stadiums. It's principally because health brothers, you know why it's high? Because healthcare costs are high. And hiring an employee is expensive, principally because healthcare costs are expensive. It's more of a healthcare problem.
You were part of the healthcare world, so I'm like, you could have done something about it. No, I'm just kidding.
I really blew my chance, didn't I?
Yeah.
Can you, we asked Larry this as well when we chatted with him. I'm just curious on, I guess, your take on what you would say, and you already were touching parts of this already, like what you would say the goal of Adventist education is at its heart. If you were to try and quantify, what would you say, what is the task trying to be accomplished?
Yeah, I think that the principal purpose of faith-based Christian Adventist education, higher education, is to turn fresh waves of young human beings into the kind of citizens that make a powerful Jesus-oriented difference in the world. I think it's about, and that involves intellectual thinking, it involves certainly professional training, it involves the skills of social and emotional intelligence. You can fill it in. That's the kind of things the three of you have in spades, right? But it's gaining those abilities, sharpening those skills with a real mission focus to say, I'm going to be salt and light in the world. I think that's the goal, is to then flood institutions in the church, flood institutions in the broader world, companies, communities in the broader world with the kinds of people that will fundamentally make a difference for good. And again, I'm not naming anything that wasn't the original intent a millennium ago and 150 or so years ago, even in the Adventist impulse, if that makes sense. I think this was the purpose.
That's interesting. I want to play devil's advocate if it's okay, especially because we recently talked to Larry. This is why we're doing a series, and this is why we've always done it. Alex, we did a series, What is an Adventist? And I think we're always going to reference that series because it is the core of all other conversations we have surrounding these different topics, whether it's theology or education or a service that our church provides. Is there's so many different lenses which we view what Adventism is about, what the mission is, and that seems to bleed into, like you alluded to, what Adventist education is all about. You specifically talk about the context of higher education, but it probably be argued just by extension that all of Adventist education should have this clear vertical alignment of mission of what it's trying to accomplish. K-16 or even beyond, you would say, what's the product we're producing as an Adventist education system, right? What I'm curious about, as you talk about Jesus being the center and salt and light, and there's a couple ways I could get into this, but I know that some would look at that response and say that is not distinct enough as an Adventist-oriented mission. And I played, again, devil's advocate in that, because I think by extension, I know that you've heard those criticisms when it comes to things that you've also been a part of, such as the One Project, when it comes to this idea of an emphasis on Jesus. I know that there's a group of Adventists that struggle with an idea of emphasizing Jesus and again, not saying that this is actually being done, but there is a response that says, because you do that, you're de-emphasizing the specific doctrine of the church, the sanctuary, prophecy, different other teachings of the church, when that is the way things are stated. So I'm curious, do you feel that there is a distinct calling of Adventist education, whether it's higher education or lower, that is unique to Adventist education? Do you feel that what you just described as the purpose of Adventist education is distinct or unique to the Adventist mission?
First, I would say absolutely there's a distinct Adventist lens by which we think and breathe and work and serve. 100%. I think there's absolutely a distinct way of understanding the world, understanding God. And I think that has to be at the center of Adventist education completely. But I think all of that distinctiveness has to focus on, center on, lead us to Jesus. And by the way, I'm parroting Ellen White here, right? Who argued all doctrine really should push us into the person of Jesus, that Jesus is the thread that runs throughout. So I don't think it's this or this. I think it's actually that my own experience as an Adventist, if I'm organizing that, it all should push me to Jesus, right? So Sabbath only gains meaning in Jesus, right? The beauty of the second coming, after all, is about the return of Jesus, right? The lifestyle that Adventists have argued for, which, by the way, now science basically said, yep, that's a really good idea. But those things are not on their own useful. I guess they are useful in a sense, but they find their full meaning as it points to Jesus. And I think that's one thing to me about the One Project that I think was misunderstood, is it was actually trying to pull everything into a focus on Jesus. It wasn't an attempt to diminish those things. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. And again, I've heard that again many times. We've had long conversations with Patty and been to many One Projects and heard the discussions on that critique of the One Project. And again, by extension, I know that Walla Walla, alongside other universities, and I don't know if this goes too much off the rails, but I know that another critique of Adventist higher education is that it is, just to give it a very superficial label, too liberal, or has lost its... No, and I mean that in a sense of, like, that is a...
People feel that way. Yeah.
A talking point is that, these Adventist universities have lost control. They've lost their Adventist identity. They've, for a multitude of reasons. It's not just Walla Walla, but there's those type of accusations have been going on for decades at this point, but have definitely heated up politically. And there's people we've talked to on this podcast that run conservative, again, when I use the word conservative, organizations, publications that will publish things about Adventist universities and the leaders, where it's about, they just have taken away the Adventist identity. We need to get back to those things. That just seems to be this constant cycle. Why do you think that is? What's creating that dynamic of a lack of a bridge in certain communities within Adventism, understanding what the mission is of these higher education campuses?
Yeah. First of all, Sean, I'll answer your question. I first want to say, Walla Walla University is a deeply faithful, deeply Adventist, squarely biblical, thoroughly committed to the project of Jesus that Adventists have been about since its inception. I will give not an inch of ground on that, because I know the students there and I've known them for a long time. I know the faculty there. It is an absolutely deeply faithful, committed place through and through. I think that you ask a really good question, is why do we go through these disruptions? I think it's hard, friends, when it's been 170 years since we said Jesus is coming again soon. It creates discomfort in us, because we have to sort out, my goodness, we're still here. In 2044, imagine that. It's in 20 years. It'll be 200 years since 1844. And some New Testament theologians, Adventist teachers that I've had, pointed out that even the early church, as they move past the death of Jesus, the death of the apostles, that first generation, they started to struggle because they thought Jesus was coming back straight away. And they had to kind of figure out, wait a minute, we're going to have to figure out how we abide, how we live, because Jesus isn't coming back straight away. I think the Adventist church is very much going through the same thing. And so issues of identity and what do we do? And then we start to nip at each other a little bit because we're not sure, what do we do with this? Because what happens if another 100 years goes by? What happens if another 100 years goes by? And it creates challenges. Now, do we sometimes say and do stupid things, even higher ed and church?
Yeah.
We all do things occasionally that probably stir the pot in ways that I remember when I was a younger guy, and I did a few things that I probably would pull back on this or that. So I think sometimes we create that. But Sean, my sense is that that we really haven't had the real conversation. And I think the real Adventist conversation is, how is it that we sort out this business that we're doing this thing for almost 200 years now, and we're an eschatological people, that's in our blood, but Jesus is coming again soon, and what do we do with this? And I think if we would have that conversation, it might help us then have conversations about what does it mean to be faithful.
I'm laughing I'm laughing, and sorry to interrupt. I'm laughing at that because the immediate response to that, and Jesse, you literally, we were looking at it before you came on, before the recording, is I'm not going to say who it was specifically, but there again are our Adventist leaders, influencers, that the response to why we're still here is unfaithfulness or a lack. Like
right.
there's this, we haven't finished the work. There is, and I don't want to go again. I'm so tempted to go off the rails in this conversation of the imminent return of Jesus, what that actually means, why my generation is super burnt out, and Anthony and Jesse, we feel the same way, where we had church members telling us, hey, in your lifetime, yeah, Jesus is coming back. Like, you may not even make it to adulthood. Like, those kind of comments.
Yeah.
Like, I have those so deeply rooted in my growing up.
I prayed, Jesus, please don't come back until I've gotten married.
Yeah.
You know.
And so I bring that up. No, but I bring that up because Alex, like you said, like, that response, like how we respond to that question of why are we still here? There is a large group of Adventism that looks at that and says, if we were truly faithful, we would hasten the return of Jesus. And yeah, we're not truly his remnant church right now. And if we were, if we experienced this latter rain, and all of this is wrapped up in this language, that if we were truly faithful to the prophetic message and mission of Adventism, mm-hmm, Jesus would return. And it's our lack of faithfulness is why we've been here almost 200 years. How do you tend to approach that conversation when people have that lens of Adventism?
Oh, mercy. Yeah, I know you've asked a big question.
I know. I don't know. It's. I know. I don't know if we have time for it, but it's.
No. It's a good. I didn't say mercy. Mercy, because it's a big question. It's the right question. I think C.S. Lewis actually has some interesting things to say about how we wait for the second coming, and he talks about. I'm really paraphrasing him. On the one side, it's that I'm not paying attention to it all. I forget about it. I don't want to think about it. I'm just going to live in the here and now. It doesn't matter. And then the other side is being obsessive about it, right? Which is, it's going to happen any second now, so you probably shouldn't build a house. You probably shouldn't. I've heard stories from Adventists who said, we built buildings on like academy campuses and we built them to last 7 years because there was no point in making them last
yeah,
long. I'm not trying to be snarky or anything.
And so
I think there's a healthy place. It's not in the middle, because I don't like the word it's in the middle, but I think there's a healthy place where Jesus says to us, and he said to his apostles, I'm coming again soon. You can trust me. My definition of soon is the only one that matters, and you don't need to worry about that. I'm going to come in good time. Allow that to bring you comfort. Allow that to bring you a sense that it's all going to, that this universe is moving in the right direction. But don't worry about the timing. And Paul says this, Peter says this, in the book of Acts. This sense of, but don't worry about the timing. And I just think, I think that, and the question you raise, if we'll just get our act together and be perfect, then we drive certain things. The problem with that is I know too many people like me that are flawed, like me. And I think we all recognize we're not perfect. And so if we're being honest, we all recognize that. So if all of us getting our act together and functioning perfectly is the thing that's going to force God to come,
mm-hmm,
yeah,
that doesn't feel like it's drenched in grace, right? It doesn't feel like that it's that God is in control. Yeah. And I think that those become dangerous. I think it's dangerous.
How about the other side of the coin, where there is a large number of Adventists, I think an increasingly large number of Adventists that are like culturally Adventist, but still aren't even really steeped in Adventist distinctives. Mm. And honestly, if you took out like State of the Dead, would be comfortable in almost any Adventist church or any non-Adventist church or many non-Adventist churches.
And non-denom. Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason I bring that up is because it feels like there's the potential that Adventism loses a place. And I'm not one to advocate that like, we have to have our place and protect it at all costs. If we don't need to exist, we don't need to exist. But I guess like why... how would you advocate for the specifics to somebody maybe who's not conservative, but maybe someone who's like, I don't know, I could go to any Christian college. Why an Adventist specific college over anything else?
Oh yeah. I think I'd first say, Jesse, there's a lot of formerly Christian, they still bear the name of Christianity, but there's a lot of higher ed in America that doesn't really function that way. So when you're talking about, so I begin by saying, which are the colleges and universities that are actually practicing and living out the values of Jesus and the scriptures are central in the project of the school. So I would just, first of all, I would say that. I think there's elements of being an Adventist, of being raised in this tradition. Brothers, I got to tell you that I just absolutely love the Sabbath rhythms. The older you get, you really start to appreciate the richness of that way of living, the health that it brings, the refocus that it brings. The Sabbath alone is powerful. I think the anthropology of Adventist, that human beings are created in the image of God, that that there's great human worth. These things are very Adventist sort of themes. I think that the second coming of Jesus, when it's not stress inducing, which is how we shouldn't teach it, but it's peace bringing, is an enormously important feature. I think a lot of Christianity doesn't really focus on where is this whole thing headed, and I think it's a huge missing piece. That's a missing piece. And I think that, again, I think to the degree that Adventists that we've run from it, it's because we've bound it up in ways that cause more stress. And I tell people, Adventists should be the least stressed out people on the planet, because Sabbath.
I feel like I've heard you say that.
Because Sabbath is like the whole purpose of a Sabbatarian lifestyle, not just the seventh day, but is that we ought to be living in a very stress-free sort of rhythm.
Yeah.
And we know that the end is, everything's going to end well because God's in control. These things should really make us low anxiety people. I mean, you know, and I think that's, and I think the other thing too, about higher ed is, I think the rich respect for God as the creator is really useful. Adventists have cared about that, right? That God made us, that's important. We've cared about the Genesis. And I think when you're looking at whether you're studying physics, biology, history, English, technology, aviation, whatever it might be, there's something about the fingerprints in the hands of God in all of that that gives it much more meaning. And hey, you guys are old dogs now. You're not young like these current students, but there's an epidemic. What's an epidemic of malaise? A loss of meaning and purpose and an anxiety that's born of not knowing. And I think if Adventists got back to that rich worldview piece that God made the world, that we're going somewhere, that there's a rhythm, we need that much more integrated view of things. And I think that's Adventist higher ed at its best is really helping young men and women sort out these big questions.
Yeah.
I think. And not everybody's doing that particularly well. And I'm certainly not disparaging. Yeah. There's Christian colleges and universities out there outside the Adventist world that are doing excellent work as well. But I think Adventists have the potential to do really good work given our tradition.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Alex, you mentioned just now other university spaces outside the Adventist world that are doing work. And we know from knowing you that you've had experience working outside the Adventist tradition and space. I'm curious for you, as you reflect on that, what do you see, I guess, major differences, but maybe I'm just more interested in, I don't know, like a compare and contrast feels too simplistic, maybe more interested in what did that time teach you? You feel like it gave any richness to what you bring to your Adventism or,
What time are you referencing, Anthony? I lost you on, what do you mean? What are you referencing?
So, It's my understanding, and maybe I'm missing things as well, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it was my understanding that you had worked outside of Adventism for a while.
No, I think you're thinking of, you went to George Fox and got a degree.
Yeah, George.
That'd be the only place.
I studied Anthony at George Fox, which is No, and I, that good.
Maybe that's
good,
what I was.
No, good question. I knew that's where you were headed. I should have picked up more quickly on that. Yeah, so George Fox University is a relatively conservative Christian university. It's in the Portland, Oregon, greater Portland, Oregon area. It's a George Fox Quaker school, but the seminary is Wesleyan. So they actually bought a seminary. I mean, they pulled a seminary, purchased a seminary or something that pulled into there. So Wesleyan, that should ring a bell. with you three good mm-hmm. Adventist scholars, that's Adventism's tree, right? That's us.
Right.
We're from the Wesleyan.
We're a branch.
Very, very much. And I think part of what was really rich there, Anthony, for me was I was one other Adventist in my cohort of maybe 25. And then I think that person ended up not completing. So I was like the lone Adventist in this group of 25. And a couple things. One, boy, it's fascinating to listen to people of other faith traditions, other Christian traditions that have the same hangups and concerns and complaints that Adventists
have. Yeah.
I mean, that you're That's sometimes funny. We're too hard on ourselves, Adventists. We're like, man, we got all these worship wars and we got these issues. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. Everybody else has the same issues we do. And that's helpful because sometimes we're so insular as Adventists and we're just like, oh my goodness, this is just, we got so many problems. And then you learn, oh, wait a minute. The Baptist in my class and the Methodist in my class and the Church of Christ folks in my class. And you go down the list and you're like, man, we're all dealing with some of the same challenges, internal and external. So that was super helpful. Mm. That was super helpful to me, just watching that. And what else? Yeah,
that almost feels like I was only going to. That made me think. Oh wow, we're more similar than sometimes we think.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I actually had a prayer group, an interdenominational prayer group, which a lot of Adventist ministers do, right? This is goes back years, and I was always struck, like there was some Lutherans in the group, and Anthony, I was always struck by the things that even as from a pastoral standpoint that they were worried about, or they were all the same stuff, which is really interesting. It's very, very similar to what Adventist pastors or the Adventist church. And I think it's helpful for us because we're too hard on ourselves sometimes, right? And what happens is we're either too hard on ourselves or we're so insular that we think we're the only ones out there, right?
Doing
and
this.
Those things are both born of insecurity, right? Mm-hmm. You think about the disciples coming to Jesus. Somebody else is out there doing work in your name. And he's like, relax. And I think part of that was his loving touch on those disciples to say, there's lots of things that I'm doing in the world, that God is doing in the world. Just do what I've asked you to do. Do what I've asked you to do. And some of that humility breeds a lot of good things in life. One, it breeds creativity, because if you're not humble, you're not curious about anything, and then you're not very creative. Humility is the mother of creativity. It's the mother of curiosity. And the other thing I think about humility is, my goodness, it takes a lot of stress off. If you're not responsible for fixing the world yourself, oh my goodness, what a relief.
Yeah.
Wow. What a gift. Thank you for that. And excuse my confusion there at the beginning. I was realizing this is the school you went to.
Speaking of Anthony, so we all went to Walla Walla, and so there's four of us on this podcast, and all four of us went to Walla Walla together, and we all graduated in 2015, and we all graduated
except for Anthony
immediately.
Yeah, I was behind.
Oh yeah, we supposed to graduate. Sure. We all immediately got married within 6 months of leaving.
We did.
So Walla Walla University, WWU, Western Wedding University, as it's called, it all worked out very well for us, except for Anthony. And we got divorced. But that's the divorce. We have to make a divorce joke. But
you got it. It's crucial.
But we all got married, and one of the things that I noticed about Adventist education is one of the things that was really awesome, but I didn't have to worry about trying to find somebody with similar worldviews to me. One of the things that I also noticed, though, was that I wasn't necessarily exposed to the world. Like when you go through Adventist education, you end up in that world, the insular world that you're talking about. And so there's deep benefits to that. Like my wife and I have a very similar worldview, and we were able to grow together in those ways. But there's also like a whole world outside of this that we inevitably face. And college does a good job. Walla Walla University, there was no like intentional, what's the right word? I can't think of the word right now. Not smothering.
Sheltering.
Sheltering. That's the word. There was no intentional sheltering.
Smothering.
there was none of that. There was always a very open view of the world around, but still you don't necessarily experience that. And so that's another thing about Adventist at higher ed that I definitely see the benefit that you're talking about. What about that other piece where we're supposed to now go into the world from here?
Yeah.
And granted, all of us went into religious roles and we're still in the careers, world, yeah. But a lot of people are going into the bigger world. So like what role can Adventist education play maybe better in the future? And maybe it already has played it very well, but even better in the future to prepare people for the world that they might be entering from an insular space?
Great question. I think in some ways it's more art than science. You guys are bringing the next generation into the world, right? So you, when you're parenting, you realize that you slowly have to open up your kids to less of your own control and more of, they're going to test things, right? They're going to be exposed to more and more of the world. And when you're parenting, you're constantly, and again, it's more art than science. You're constantly trying to figure out how much should I shelter my kids, right? It's the right impulse. And if you shelter them too much, that there's damage. And then if you just let them go crazy, that's also, those parameters are important too. And I think education's the same way, right? So if you think about elementary school, there's a certain level of protection you're giving them. And then you get into high school and there's a different piece. And I think the question for this conversation is at the undergraduate level, what does that look like in an Adventist educational system? What are we talking about? And then I think when you go to graduate school, you're in a whole another category, et cetera. So I think mature, rational people have conversations that are framed that way. It's not about, there's no parameters, let's just cut loose and whatever. And it's not about just tamping things down and not being exposed to anything. It's about how is it that you're navigating slowly, it's kind of Sherpa-ing, if that's a verb, human beings along as they become adults. And how do you find the sweet spot there? That's how I see it. Again, I'm going to be an advocate. You can imagine in my role is president of Walla Walla University, what's the alternative? Like you send an 18-year-old to a tough public university where every single class is by definition taught from an atheist or agnostic or secular humanist worldview. Now, I know loads of people that went through that experience that are amazing Christians, amazing Adventists. I'm not, but what I'm saying is we ought to think more carefully before we're, hey, good luck, you're 18. Have at it. Now you're going to spend the next 5 to 6, you're going to spend the next 4, 5, 6 years of your life immersed with really smart people, professors that are going to, they're not unbiased, by the way. They're going to have a perspective that God doesn't exist. Generally.
Yeah. Right.
Generally speaking. I think I'm speaking the truth here, right? And you're going to just, good luck with that. And I think that's where people that care about the things that Jesus taught and the worldview that Christianity gives us, do you really want to be without that framing as you think about your academic studies, your professional preparation, do you really want to jump in to good luck? Because again, the public university or the secular university is not this wonderful, unbiased environment. You're kidding yourself, right? It has a philosophical perspective. And so I'm giving you a long answer, but I think it's to my mind, and again, I've got 2 kids and one starting as a college student next year. What I'm hopeful for is a rich framework where God is at the center, a worldview where God is the creator of all things from an Adventist perspective with a Jesus at the center. And I do anticipate that those professors will slowly, carefully open up the world to my child in appropriate ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's where we need to have the conversation because I think that's what's, and Jesus, you remember, sends the disciples out as well. And then they come back and they huddle up. So even he's releasing them to be exposed to the world. And so anyway, that's my take on it.
That's a great, as soon as you say other places aren't unbiased, I think that's the easy way. That's what I think I thought when I was younger. I was like, oh yeah, like we have a bias. And you spoke to this earlier, when we're insular and when we almost look at ourselves too much, we all of a sudden start to see all these issues and think we're the only ones that, it's like a weirdly prideful, we're the only ones that have these issues. Everyone else has it. But then the older I've gotten, the more I've realized, and I don't even mean with bad intentions, but everybody has an agenda. And so you have to understand that going wherever you go, you're going to be getting a philosophical statement.
So during the pandemic, I went and picked up a Master's of Science in Bioethics. Okay. I went back to school.
Okay.
I went back to school.
As one does.
I went to school, Master of Science in Bioethics. It was part of the work I was doing in healthcare. I wanted to get my head at a different level in terms of understanding that work. A universe, wonderful professors, classmates I loved, but a thoroughly, from a secular humanistic worldview, everything. And I kept writing these papers. Yeah. Brothers, I kept writing these papers and I would ask the question, why do we even have this program? Why do we care that people act ethically? Why does it matter to us that a physician does the right thing and not the wrong thing? And I just kept asking these questions and they had no answer.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
And in one paper I wrote, I argued that a theistic worldview was the only foundation that could even give rationality to why we would even care that we should treat a patient properly. And the professor, who was brilliant, by the way, just incredible, just came unglued on me in response, basically saying,
oh, interesting.
And again, great. I'm not disparaging, but what struck me is a thoroughly secular humanist viewpoint, period.
Mm-hmm.
And there's consequences for that. It's not just like you got these religious schools that they're very God, very biased for God. Yeah, I admit that. Walla University is totally biased for a godly worldview, 100%. And the university over the mountains or the university across the continent is totally committed to the exact opposite viewpoint. And I think that's something.
Right.
I think that's something that we all need to recognize, that we have a viewpoint. We acknowledge what that viewpoint is. We humbly entertain other viewpoints because I think that's part of intellectual rigor. But we all need to fess up to that. And I think, I just think we need to, and parents need to be thinking through when they're like sending their 18-year-olds off to who knows what, there's consequences for that too. And if you want them to be drenched in a secular humanist worldview for 5 or 6 years where their frontal lobe is being wired up, mind you.
Yeah.
Full circle. Yeah.
You can make that decision. And again, I'm just saying, I think you have to consider it. You got to pay attention.
Yeah. I think it definitely, like speaking to Walla Walla and Anthony and I can definitely attest to this, is that period of life during college is filled with different angst and questioning and struggle. Where we went through the entire Adventist system, we were both pastor's kids. We were steeped in Christianity and Adventism. And there was like a summer, Anthony, we've talked about this before, you know, that dark night of the soul where we went through, where we just looked at each other, are we atheist? Do we really believe in God? Like,
Sean,
to be clear, I stayed true to the light.
Through and through. Jesse was a true believer the whole time, but there was a summer where Sean and I came back from break and we were in our first campus ministries meeting with Patty McCoy. And right after we looked at each other, we're like, I think I'm an atheist. We were both at that place.
Yeah, it was just,
but once Patty was out of their lives, then they came back to Christ. But
yeah, Patty was the catalyst for that drama. But what I'm saying is, being at Walla Walla, having a community, and this is also an academy too, by extension, to a certain point. Both Jesse and Anthony, I know from high school as well, and there were other important, as we've talked about, people that, although it wasn't a perfect experience going through Adventist education, it was a space where we could question things, have people that did influence us in healthy ways, whether it was other students or teachers or deans. And it was the same way at Walla Walla. There were just things that we got to be a part of through worship, through classes. I know something that was highly influential beyond just having a core group of friends where we were pushing what it meant to be disciples of Christ. Just showing up to Dave Thomas's class, like he just, when it got into apologetics, when it got into the foundations of what it means to believe in a God that exists, that there were just things that he would push me in ways in my brain that I hadn't thought through, that I hadn't processed. So when I was questioning and saying, hey, does our faith really hold up? You go, Alex, you just mentioned the morality argument. It's a very compelling argument for Christianity, for the existence of God. What's really meaning without that worldview? That someone created us and gave us inherent value. Just fleshing that out in a non-superficial way that higher education can do when you're around other people that are searching for similar things, having professors, having pastors and other people in a space for a certain amount of time when you're just highly influenced by the world around you. that is critical. And it's not a guarantee. People can leave an Adventist school and choose to reject God, but it's also, are you giving the best opportunity for someone to see why this all matters?
I like that. And I think, Sean, that's part of why I think if you think about faith as a scale of 1 to 10, let's just say for sake of argument, that's why if you have a freshman come to college and let's say they're a 7 in conviction of God, let's say they're a 7 and let's say they leave at a 5.
Yeah.
I would argue that's not necessarily that the Adventist University has failed them. It may be that they would have gone from a 7 to a 0 or a 7 to a 1 if it were not for the kind of class you argued for. And I think that part of what I would wish for those that care about Adventist higher ed is you need to be patient because you're planting seeds that may actually blossom a decade later, 20 years later. And I know some of your classmates, I know students, that's exactly what happened. They graduated thinking they were agnostic or not even sure, but then things grew later on and they tie it back to the Dave Thomases, to your point, Sean. They tie it back to classes or experiences, relationships they had. And I think it's short-sighted to go, let's figure out what they know when they're freshmen. Let's figure out what they know when they're seniors. But a boom, we know, not necessarily. And that's not how humans work, right? And seeds are planted early that really come back to us. And you're referencing Larry Blackmer. I interacted with him 35 years ago when all of a sudden I'll be doing something and I'll think about something Larry said or did that I hadn't thought about in 3 decades. And I think this is part of the power of education is we think of our teachers that way. Teachers have this incredible power. And if those teachers are planting the right seeds, that stuff sticks with us. And
sure.
Yeah. Alex, I'm curious, maybe as we start to wrap up, you're coming in as a president here to a space of higher education, all centered around young adults in this developing age group that range that you've spoken about. What are the things, I guess, that concern you the most about young adults, undergrad students, master's level students in 2024? So what concerns you the most, but also what gives you hope?
Yeah, great. That's a great question. I would say there's many things that concern me, but I think the biggest one is and you guys are all just old enough that you just missed this. You're lucky. But that's the rise of this device right here that I'm holding in my right hand has fundamentally damaged, I'm using a negative word, has fundamentally damaged the way that we interact in human relationships, the way we communicate, the way we conduct our politics, the way that we engage. And the emerging generations now are in real trouble in terms of their capacity to relate to one another, to engage one another, the attention spans have changed, the ability to get together in social environments has changed. That's the number one thing I worry about, honestly, is our relationship to technology and I think the pandemic just accelerated that.
Yeah.
A lot of ways, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys have had guests that have talked about that, but I think it's really accelerated that because of the isolation. But we're going to have to figure out how we're actually going to build a society that's not based on hashtagging in social media and back and forth and all the algorithms now that we're fed with these tools that just reinforce our previous position, that sort of just make us fearful of the other. Anthony, that's the single thing, honestly, truly, that probably worries me because our conversations, that's the opportunity we have to grow as a community. That's the actual, how do the four of us build a community even now? It's because we're looking at each other, we're engaging in a conversation, we're thinking and challenging and without that, and that's where I think technology has, this piece in particular that I'm holding has caused, it's dealt it a blow. And I think church attendance down, going to a football game down, going to the movie theater down, going bowling down, anything that's community related is suffering because of the individualization of the tool. Long answer. Love to have sometime you should do a full series just on the invasion of technology. It's a big enough issue. And social scientists are tracking this now and are really worried. So I think that's number one. And what's interesting is that the most negative impact is on the young.
Yeah,
what's interesting. It's on, in fact, Jonathan Haidt's book, and I just lost the title, His most recent
the
book.
The Anxious Generation?
Yes.
His own?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. His most recent book basically says you shouldn't even give this to someone under the age of 18.
Yeah.
It's a it's a warning. And I'm bought into that. And I see it. I've got a daughter and a son, and I see how it creates even in their lives, right? How I see the damage it causes. So I think that's one. I think where I'm most hopeful is, and maybe it's a result of technology. So maybe I'm gonna say on the other side, but there's more sort of openness and more global thinking than I've ever seen before. By global, there's greater recognition of cultures and different kinds of people, and there's a broadness of perspective that in some ways models what I see in the Apostle Paul, right? Who's like this man, he saw the world of the Roman Empire, and he understood meteorology and athletics and politics and economics. And it's interesting to me to watch the sophistication of these younger generations, much more sophisticated than I was and my peers when we were. And I think a lot of it is because of these exposures, in a sense. I don't think it makes up for the negative thing I'm worried about, but I do think there's a brightness that is there, that I see a lot of optimism there. There's an openness that is a plus. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But when you don't know what to do with that openness because you've been locked into hiding behind this device, I think that's where the risk is. But I don't know. I could opine on this.
No, that's great.
While, there's no question that this tool has impacted humanity more than any other tool in the last 20-ish, probably not quite, but the last 15 years or so. It has fundamentally changed the way that think about everything, the way we interact with the world. And I don't think we really fully understand the consequences yet.
Yeah.
It's going to be a while
in like 20, 30 years to look back. But
It will be. Yeah. I was going to say, Alex, just again, thank you for joining us. I do want to say, like I mentioned, and we could all mention people at Walla Walla that have impacted us. And like I mentioned, professors, Patty, as much as we rag on him, like he even coined the idea of like the sixth love language was ridicule. And
we quote that all the time.
And you and him modeled that even from the pulpit at Walla Walla really well. I think you and Patty and others that just gave an authentic voice to what it means to live out faith and lead out, that influenced me personally in such a big way, listening to your sermon, seeing you lead out in class and other spaces. That was important to my life. I know for each one of us that was huge. And so thank you for doing that. Thank you for being in that space. And I think we all are excited, Jesse said at the beginning, for this next chapter where you're the president. I think that's exciting to see that. I know it's a lot for you and you've probably got a lot of questions, but it's just, it's exciting to see that next chapter for Walla Walla.
I remember very well being at Vespers and Patty getting up and somehow weaving an insult towards you into his, and then I think it would be like the next week you would get up and return the favor. It was pretty great. Still remember those pretty well. But I am curious, Alex, and I share the same feelings that Sean did watching. It's weird. You talk about getting to Walla Walla and loving Adventist education, all that stuff. It's got to be weird at some point. And I know you're a humble guy, but you also recognize the reality of your situation, which is it's got to be weird to get to this point and realize like you're one of the guys now, like in the Adventist world as a college president, you have a lot of influence and say and ability to change things, which is really cool. And I know probably less than a lot of us think. You have a lot of stuff you have to work through, but at the same time, it's a crazy reality. And you guys, there's a whole generation of you that set the tone that many of us are living in the result of. I would say that all four of us on this podcast, and then also in the various ways that we work in the Adventist Church, a lot of that way has been cleared by your generation doing a lot of the work that you guys did to almost pull Adventism back from the legalistic potential that it was continuing to go down and say, no, there's actually something different here. And so I really want to say thank you to you guys for doing that. And then I also wanted to ask, as you step into this role of Walla Walla University president, what are you, and maybe this can be our last question, what are you most excited for over the next few years?
I think I'm most excited about watching what's possible when a group of people commit themselves to the intellectually rigorous, humble and curious, playful and deeply serious way of Jesus together. And truly, I told a colleague of mine when I was thinking about making the change to this work, I said, I really am all in it on Jesus. I said, at this point in my life, like I really actually believe that his way, his truth, his life, like what I see there is so incredibly attractive that wherever I land, whether it's in healthcare or church or in higher ed, that's what I want to do. And I think that that's what actually excites me, to watch what's possible when a motley crew of people and all of our flaws and all of our differences, if we rally around that vision, what might be possible in a world that has a lot that's scary right now, right? That's not particularly grand. Instead of whining and moaning about it, what would it be like for us to actually model something better? Instead of just deconstructing it all, what would it be to construct something better? That's totally what motivates me, honestly.
Yeah, and while we've created that space, again, I know we're closing, but for us to be able to do Circle Church back in 2012, which it's mind-blowing, it's been, what, almost 15 years, which is just weird how long that's been around. But
That's 12 years.
Okay, 2012.
Specific, Sean had to take...
2024. 12 years, 12 years, 12 years, sorry.
I had to take finite math.
Listen, that was a battle. You're right. 12 years. You're right. It's been 12 years. I apologize. I'm getting ahead of myself. It's going that direction, though. It's been over a decade, Jesse. Having that space to make that and create that, where we sat in a dorm room and just prayed about, like, hey, instead of complaining about what we don't, you know, we don't know what religion is about and what God is pushing us to do, let's just try something out. And we had that space to create and wrestle and do something that's, it went way beyond what we could have ever imagined when the way the Spirit led there and after we left. It's just wild. That kind of stuff can happen at a place like Walla Walla. So
yeah. There, the arc, maybe I'll say this, circling back to what I said at the very beginning, the fact that you as a university church senior pastor allowed a 19-year-old into your office to say, I feel like a space that you lead is idolatry, that you had room for that.
Yeah.
But I genuinely don't think I would be a pastor if you had not done that, because
I think too, in the three of your examples of this, the real magic and the power of the experience does not come if you had walked into Walla Walla University as consumers. Oh, I'm going to have great teachers and they're going to give me great this. And that's never going to do it. It's that you chose to be you chose to be creators when you were there. And this, I'm tipping you off on a little bit of the speech I'm going to give the students at the beginning of the year when they're gathered here in the president's address, which is the secret of college is it's going to be what the legacy you leave. It's going to be what you contribute. Mm. It's going to be what you choose to create here that will have legacy. It's That's not good. Going to be, did I get all the cafeteria food I wanted? And did I get all the professors I wanted? And did I blah, 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 blah. That's just consumerism, which is going to ruin it. It's going to be, do you seize the opportunity as students to go, I'm going to leave a legacy they're going to talk about for 30 years here in the right, hopefully in the right sort of way. But does that make sense? I think the three of you modeled that. You dove in, like Circle Church or 100 other things you were contributing. You engaged in those conversations. Anthony, you showed up in my office and challenged me. Those are the things that mattered. It wasn't, did you eat from the smorgasbord of what the university offered you? And I think that's the secret of really making a university experience great, is you decide what contribution are you going to make while you're here. That's the game. I think that's the dividing line for students.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think
that's well said.
seen that as a reality. I look back at that time and think God did incredible things through us. And it was just like offering him that thing. And we didn't even know what it was going to be or what the legacy of what it would be. And I think the same goes. And what you just are what you're saying is it's like what you give is better than what you receive. And I just wholeheartedly back that. I just want to say for one more time, we're really excited about you being the president there, Alex, just as alumni. When we heard that announcement, we're like, that's going to be good. So
a win.
We're praying for good things there. And yeah, we really appreciate you speaking into Adventist education. And we'll be looking forward to seeing maybe in 5 to 10 years when we look back and see what's happened. That'll be cool.
We're bald and gray.
Sean, stop this.
I'm already bald and you're already gray, Sean.
Look at how good Alex looks. Look at how good Alex looks.
Look how good Alex looks.
We're not even 10 years away from 50s. So there's hope. Not for you, Sean, but there's hope.
No. You know what? Yeah. You know what'll keep you young, though, all three of you? Sending donations to your alma mater.
There it is.
You did say it's better to give than to receive. So yeah,
I get it. That's right. There it is. There it is.
We really appreciate the conversation, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, guys.
I appreciate it. Hey friends, you've just been listening to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Leiter, and on behalf of all the guys, we just want to say a big thank you to all of you who have come alongside us in our journey to have honest conversations about Adventism. We appreciate each one of you. As usual, if you haven't already, give us a follow on Instagram. It is like our home base, social media-wise. And if you'd like to stay up to date on the episodes that we're posting or just different things that we're doing, you can follow us there. We're also like low-key a meme account, and we post silly videos and other stuff. So give us a follow. We would love it. Also want to say a big thank you to our patrons, and we're really grateful to each one of you for helping us make quality content. To each one of you, a big thank you. And if you'd like to follow us on Patreon, you can. There's a link in our Instagram bio if you'd like to support us. Thank you so much. Last but not least, if you could you leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you listen, because it really helps us actually in the algorithm to help new people get their eyes on the podcast. So if you could just go in, give us a little, hopefully a 5-star review, be honest, that really helps us just in the algorithm, the way that these things work these days. So we really, really appreciate it. All right, I think that's it for now, friends. So we will see you next time on Seeking What They Sought.